Hello. Welcome to Local Link Hubs podcast, a show with local impact for global change. Local Link Hub is the localization and partnership initiative for Terre des Hommes. Local Link Hub is a global online platform that provides free e-learning and capacity development resources for local and national actors. Through this platform, Terre des Hommes aims to contribute to a power shift to localize aid, making the provision of aid more equal and sustainable. We support our local partners to become better prepared for future crises. This project is funded by the Samaha Foundation. I'm your host, Enike Vos, and I'm the communication and content manager for Local Link Hub, and thank you for listening to today's episode, Uncovering the Hidden Indirect Costs in NGO Funding. Let's get started. On Local Link Hub podcasts, we discuss topics related to partnership and localization. In today's episode, I will be talking with Martin Gallard, Terre des Hommes localization project manager, and we'll be discussing about the indirect costs in NGO funding. Our guest is the partnership and localization project manager at Terre des Hommes Lausanne. Martin manages TDH's global strategy with local and national partners and wrote TDH's global policy on partnership and localization. His role also involves the creation of partnership toolkits adapted to TDH's local partners. Before joining TDH, he worked for several international NGOs around the world, including Iraq, Lebanon, and Ethiopia, where he acquired extensive knowledge of project development, monitoring and evaluation, and child protection. He believes that equity and sustainability are the most important aspects of working with local and national actors. Hello, Martin. It's really great to have you on this podcast. I think we all can agree that for all NGOs, local or international, money is the number one issue, which always keeps them up at night. So today we are going to discuss about the indirect costs. To be frank, I'm not a money person. So before we begin, please explain me and to our listeners what constitutes an indirect cost for an NGO.
Thanks, Nico. Thanks for having me on this podcast. So indirect cost refers to a lot of different costs that international NGOs or national NGOs can have, but it's all this necessary and cost to manage an organization. So it can be to oversee, for example, your operations, your policies. It's every cost that you cannot charge to one funding arrangement with a direct use. In a sense, it's all the costs related to, for example, your rent for your office, the administrative costs related to utilities. It can be everything that you need for your financial team to run, your logistics team to run, your fundraising team to run. It's everything that's around the operations and the project that you may be running at country level. They're really important for you to run a smooth operation that has everything it needs to operate. So it's not really related to a direct project implementation, but everything that's around it and all the consumptions related to this project operations. So there's plenty of examples that come to mind, but for example, the rent, fleet that you use, the salaries of all the people that take care of the administration cost, the relation with country, with the government in your country of intervention, and plenty of things like that that are not just project focused. So that's the idea of indirect cost, and they're absolutely necessary for international NGOs and national NGOs. They're opposed to what we call direct costs, as I said before, that are really just project focused, 100% operation focused.
So thank you so much for explaining this. And I'll then start with my next question. What do you think, what are the structural barriers in place for these local and national NGOs when it comes to obtaining funds for indirect costs?
So, yeah, there is a lot of issues for local NGOs in obtaining those indirect costs. It's a very tricky topic for a lot of reasons. But what we've seen so far is, in general, direct funding to local NGO structures remains extremely low when it comes directly from major donors. A lot of major donors and, you know, global assistance goes in majority through UN agencies and international NGOs because they have gathered over the years administrative security that they can ensure to make sure that the grants and the money that are granted to them are used efficiently and that governments and donor agencies can have value for their dollars. The problem is that smaller NGOs don't necessarily or are still growing as local agencies that can manage this money. And major donors, governments in the West or in greater countries, are quite risk averse. They don't want to take any risk with the money that they spent. It can be for a variety of reasons, but obviously there could be terrorism, corruption, diversion of funds. These are things that already exist on the field and that a lot of major donors are really afraid of. And to palliate to that, they go through intermediaries like Terre des Hommes, for instance, but also all the UN agencies that you can think of or international NGOs. And this prevents local NGOs to have access to indirect costs because they're not, in most cases, and despite a lot of great work that they do, they're not necessarily trusted to manage great funds because they don't have the administrative systems in place because of years of them being captated by international NGOs. They don't have or are still growing in terms of skills to provide, you know, rigorous due diligence, grant reporting, you know, administrative security to major donors. All this time, international NGOs, UN agencies have received the money to take care of it for local structures. And that has been a pass-through model that is not conducive of sustainable models. It has not led for local NGOs to sustainability, to equitability, and for them to take on the next challenges that will come to them. So we have to change this paradigm and increase the capacity of our partners, but also give them an equal standard and an equal chance to receive and manage those funds because they're able to do it, because they're closer to the communities that are in need, and because they have this legitimacy is in the right path of history and must happen. And this common practice of managing indirect costs must be handed to our local and national partners to change this unfair system that has been ongoing for quite a few years. So it is our duty as intermediary, as international NGOs, as UN agencies, to move away from these structural barriers that we have set and that, you know, are still in place today. Although there are some changes, it is still very much an issue.
I noticed that you mentioned the sustainability. Can you please elaborate how does indirect costs impact this sustainability for a project, both for international and both for local NGOs?
Indirect costs, it's a very important way for your NGO to structure itself. As I said before, it is something that international NGOs go after. In most of the European donor, you get around 7% of the overall grant to structure yourself as an NGO. US donors are usually more generous. It revolves around 15 to 18%. And all, these are all costs that you use to help your staff learn, to help your staff grow, train themselves, to help your staff, to help your NGO properly manage grants, do reporting, ensure that the logistics, the policies, like fair policies are in place, that there's no terrorism, and that there is monitoring, evaluation done, learning, basically everything that allows, that revolves around the project to make sure that quality is here. And there hasn't been any sustainable impact for local NGOs because we never allowed them to obtain these administrative costs and to structure themselves. They don't manage because they're only seen as project implementers, as implementing partners that only do a piece of the project, because for a variety of reasons, but we don't allow them to gather admin costs, to train their staff. Many of their staff are actually poached and taken by international NGOs as soon as they're considered strong enough to work with international NGOs or UN agencies. And so that's a real problem for their sustainability and their existence in their respective country of intervention. They don't manage to do a strategy, they don't manage to do a fundraising a program for themselves, or even have the staff that they need to monitor and evaluate themselves, or design policies, or do, you know, their own communication policies and standards. So in essence, it's really hard for local NGOs to remain sustainable when they don't have the tools to do so. And to become sustainable, you have to structure yourself to exist in a given environment. You must keep your security standards high. You must keep, you know, good documentation. You cannot be constantly on a tight flow where you're going to implement just a project for just a short period of time. And that's the main issue, basically, that relates, that connects the lack of indirect cost and the sustainability of smaller NGOs. That is also the case in some aspects with international NGO, but international NGOs usually have a Western country behind that can sustain their presence and their administrative costs as part of the foreign policy of this said country. This is a lot harder in countries where states are either failed or not able to do it. And it is the role of international aid also to provide standards and the ability for these local NGOs or smaller NGOs to structure themselves and become leading actors in their own field and help them help themselves. They have the intrinsically, they have the legitimacy to do so, and they must be the ones doing it for sustainable impact in their countries.
So we both work at a project that actually works for localization, for partnership, and we are working to empower local and national actors to be better prepared for future crises. And I was wondering, what can international NGOs do to support local organizations to better understand and to better manage these indirect costs?
Yeah, no, that's a question that we're definitely thinking about at Terdesum and as part of our partnership and localization policy. It is quite a complex topic given the funding streams that exist in the sector and sometimes contradictory context that we can be in. But there's definitely some approaches that we have that encompass solutions. I think, first of all, is to try and, as much as possible, exit the project-based short-term approach that can exist in certain contexts. We've been working, especially perhaps a bit more in the humanitarian sphere than the development sphere, but we've been working with short-term contracts that can be 6 months or 1 year and that relate to a very specific topic where international NGOs will come, act upon it, work on it, and then leave 2 years after without properly implementing a handover. We've also seen a few contexts where aid is provided by some international NGOs, and then once the funding ends, the international NGO retracts, and then beneficiaries are just not sustained in the long run. What we need to do is to provide flexible multi-year funding to local partners that we have and that we trust. Perhaps there is a phrase such as fewer partners, better partners. Involve in a set of partners that we know will do the job and are reliable and that we've worked with for a long time without closing the door to like new partnerships and helping smaller NGOs grow. But as long as you keep it as flexible for partners to have access to indirect costs, as I said before, and multi-year, giving the time for these partners to evolve and grow and become who they should become to be sustainable and represent like a strong actor in the change in their own country of intervention, you need these flexible multi-year funding streams. And so you have to accept that you're going to settle for longer term partnerships. You have to accept that your NGO is here, or international NGOs, if they want to do this properly, they have to do it for the long term. They have to do it sustainably, and have to accept also that it will require resources that will not go to your international NGO. It will have to be sometimes a painful decision where you will have to favor the partner that you have in country to ensure that it becomes sustainable for him to exist in that country. And this is something that goes through capacity development. This is one thing that is absolutely needed for local NGOs to become stronger and be able to manage indirect costs, be able to obtain indirect costs. There is the capacity development. International NGOs have gathered this knowledge through interventions across the world, but also through interventions that are backed by headquarters and strong commitments made to donors and strong teams that are based in, you know, London, Paris, Geneva, New York. And these, their abilities to create trainings to maintain high standards must be handed over to local partners. Systematic capacity development and funding to capacity development must be gathered by international NGOs to hand over to local partners. These are, we're talking of long-term progress, long-term support, and this is something that the system, the sector must understand. We must step out of the short-term aspect of thing and think long-term. And that is, you know, something that will eventually help local NGO to and local partners that we may have to reach and manage better indirect costs, obtain them. And that goes through perhaps one last thing is that increasing their representation, their existence to the ones that have the power and the money in Geneva, in London, New York, the ones that are handing over these aid funds. We must, as international NGOs and as intermediaries of assistance, ensure that the smaller ones, the local partners that we have, the ones that don't have access to all these cities and these UN meetings and all these donor agencies, we must ensure that they're represented, that they're valued, that their existence is acknowledged, and that their work is acknowledged, because they are the ones that are driving changes at field level. And ultimately, a lot of the success is theirs too. And it's usually not properly valued in the right places. So this is for us to do as international NGOs to put these their credits in the right place where it belongs.
Can you suggest some models that could be applied to help these few selected partners to access these funds for indirect costs, perhaps?
Yeah, so there's a variety of models. It is quite a complex topic also because of all the foreign policy challenges that we can think of at the moment. As you know, foreign assistance has grown and COVID has hit, and we know context, a worldwide context where humanitarian assistance is as high as ever, the needs are as high as ever. There's a lot of refugees and people in need all over the world, and all these crises are increasing, and there's in many countries sort of a donor fatigue as well. But there's some models that exist for local NGOs to improve. So I was mentioning it a little bit, but there is, you know, the participatory grant making. This is one basic one, and it's really, it's been ongoing for a few years now, but it must take steam and grow, which is basically just sharing decision making, a model where there is a shared decision making between a national NGO or a governmental institution and an international NGO, in which we have, you know, common projects designed together, common programs designed together, and then we go to the donor or we start working together, ensuring that there is, you know, a shared representativity, a shared interest to the project success. So this can be formed through consortium, for example, or like bilateral partnerships that can be systematic, but that's a model that already exists, that's already in place. It hasn't solved all the handover issues and all the ownership for some local partners, because as you know, some crises are just too strong for local partners to handle as well. So these are pretty specific issues that must be identified. But this is one model that works absolutely well, and that can become stronger in the coming years and be much more of a leading model. Another one is perhaps the, as I said, co-management is one, but working with what we call pooled funds. So pooled funding is a funding solution that's offered to international NGOs and NGO, but that can be co-managed, meaning that there's ownership for a local NGO of a fund that can go, that you know, they can govern and then can administer, and that can be directed to either a local NGO or an international NGO to be very specific to one certain context, to one piece of assistance that's needed in a given context. There's one in existence, that's for example the aid fund for North Syria, which worked quite well in addressing some very specific topics and content and providing some sense of ownership for some local NGOs that were able to work through this pooled funding and thanks to these pooled funds. And yeah, I think these are two models that can be used, but also just as a general way of doing things, there is the smart way of doing it. So like just smart indicators, but an outcome-based financing where we see very directly and explain very clearly the shared intervention between, you know, an international NGO and the capacity building it can bring to a local NGO, and the other way around, mutually working together, where the local NGO also had things to teach to an international NGO towards a shared outcome and a shared goal, basically. And these are, you know, I think, very interesting ways to leading new funds and working together with the indirect cost, emerging models to be more equitable, to be more sustainable as international and local NGOs working together.
Oh, I see that we have a lot of work to do in this field. As a final question, let's have a hypothetical situation. Let's imagine that you are a head of local NGO and you meet a fairy and you have access to the money you want to spend on indirect costs. And what now? What's the next step?
This is really up to their own strategy, but there is definitely a few things that come immediately to mind. Perhaps the most important thing to begin with is set a fundraising strategy and set up a fundraising team that will help me solidify my income so I can keep on organizing myself. So this is basically the first investment, if I can say, that I would do, because if you want to solidify yourself, to keep donors involved and maintain your operations, you must invest in what will keep you afloat as an NGO. So making sure that you're able to provide qualitative projects and that you're able to have a team that will keep the interest growing for your work, for your project, is perhaps the first thing I would do. And then what is very important is be able to solidify quality projects. So monitoring and evaluation, accountability, learning, ensuring that the reporting I do about my project and the communication that I do about it is very strong, keeping people involved, making sure that people know about what we do as an organization, how we do it, why we do it, really reinforcing as much as possible the relationship, the external engagement that you can have, the public relations, to make sure that it's we're heard and that our goals are achieved and that we report them well. And then similarly, and very importantly, being able to provide quality reporting on your administrative, your human resources, your financial practices, your logistics practices, basically internal auditing must be spot on for you to be a serious contender and a serious actor in the local NGO sector. That will really make you look different, or what you can do really well compared to the others is also here. Your own organizational development is also very much one of the first mission that you want to focus on, to make sure that there's clear policies in place, that you can answer to all the donors' requirements for funding that can be applied, and that you can appear as a serious actor globally, at country level, but also globally, which means being able to have them in several languages, but essentially appear as serious as you can be. And I think this is really what will make you sustainable and strong on the long run. So these are the few orientations that I can think of immediately, but there's plenty more that are quite specific to each context, and that's really up to each their own. But yeah, I guess these are my two cents on the matter.
Okay, thank you very much, Martin, for your time and for your really good thoughts. And for those who would want to find out more about Terre des Hommes localization policy, we will have a webinar on the 25th of April, 2024, starting from 10 a.m. Central European Time. You can register for this event on our website at locallink.childhub.org. I'm Enikő Vas, and you've been listening to a Local Link Hub podcast. We had help from Judit Németh Almási and Ilária Kolcsi-Ági. Thanks to all of you for listening, and thank you, Martin Gala, for joining me today on this Local Link Hub podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you want to learn more about Terre des Hommes initiative, please visit our website locallink.childhub.org. If you have any comments on the episode or want to share your thoughts for the focus of future episodes, contact us via social media on Facebook or LinkedIn, or email us on locallink@chartup.org. Thanks for joining. See you at our next episode.